they both compete in. And I think the keys, when I was at Arca Chemical, I established three basic things that you had to have. And one was a unique product, or a technological or a cost advantage. Not a perceived one, but a real one. Because most people think they're better than everybody else, but they really aren't. And so I think those are going to be the keys to future profitability. Otherwise, the margins are going to be low and you're going to be squeezed. The final point is that you have to be as efficient as the, you have to be the low-cost producer.
Doesn't that suggest there's a huge amount of the chemical industry as we know it will disappear here in the long, in 25-year horizon?
No, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a shift. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have figured that out. The Germans and some Americans are investing heavily in China.
Hastening the inevitable.
Yeah. There's no question. Well, the Chinese market itself is a big market. Mm-hmm. And will grow to consume much of that capacity. So you have to keep that in mind. A lot of the capacity in China is being used internally. Mm.
Then you were saying that Arco got scale advantage in Europe.
Yeah.
In the end, the Chinese are going to have scale advantage.
Sure.
Yeah. 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 Yes.
China is going to be an inevitable force in the world because of the number of people. As India should be as well. Mm-hmm. And the Indians are beginning to get more and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we turn to family territory then? And let's start with Anne and go back to you know, where you first met and who
I was. I came to Philadelphia in 1959. And I didn't know anyone. Got an apartment downtown, and 315 South 15th, as I remember, at the corner of the Lansing and 15th Street, and lived there for a while in a furnished apartment, and there were a lot of amusing things that happened there. And then eventually established a, moved into a house where a bunch of young guys from Arco had a house in Yate, Pennsylvania. And then finally into another apartment with some other people from Arco in Lansdowne. So when I first came to Philadelphia, I lived downtown, then I lived in Yaden, and then I lived in Lansdowne. And I looked for ways of meeting people and so forth, and there was a group called the Catholic College Graduates Club, or the Catholic Alumni Club. And they used to have meetings and some dances and so forth. And I would go to that. And that's actually where I met Anne. We disagree on this, but I remember it being the Marion Tribute House where there was a cocktail party and some dancing for this group, Catholic Alumni Club. And I actually went to that party with another woman that I was dating I had been going out with for some time, and she was 10 years older than I was. And she was a manager at IBM. And I remember she was making more money than I was, and she had 10,000 shares of IBM stock. But she was 38, and I was 36, and I was 26. And I had decided that just wasn't going to work. And on the way to this party or dance and whatnot, I told her that. I thought it was better that we not see each other. So course, she was very upset. But anyway, I was sitting there by myself and whatnot, and Anne came in with some facts. And as I have said to many people many times, I remember exactly what she was wearing. And she had long hair then, and she was wearing a black dress with a brown sash. And she walked across the room. She was very tall. She had high heels on. And I looked up and I said, "That's for me." And so I went up to her and talked with her and whatnot, and asked her out, and told her I'd get tickets to Beckett, which was Richard Burton was starring in Philadelphia, and I couldn't get them, and but I kept the date and took her out to a restaurant which was old rage called Lineman's Luau. And it was in Melbourne, and got a reservation for Lineman's Luau, took her there, and I remember it was so expensive that I remember making sure she saw the bill. Now we're talking 1960, and the bill was like $19, and you know, I wanted to make sure she understood this was really a stretch. So anyway, we went to Lineman's Luau, and asked her out again the next week, and we went to Beckett, and then asked her out a third time, and took her to the William Penn Inn, which is up in Gwinnett, and she lived in Cheltenham, in Philadelphia, but on Cheltenham Avenue. Make a long story short, on the way back, got driving down Route 309 through Flower Town, I said to her, "How would you like to get married?" And she said to me, "Are you insane? I don't even know you." And I said, "Well, we've been out three times, really, after all, you know." She said, "Don't be ridiculous." And to make a long story short, I said to her, "Well, I'll give you 6 months," I said, "and I'll ask you the question again." I said, "But, you know, I'm going to be 27 years old or so, and I'm interested in finding someone to get married to. You look like the perfect candidate for me." So, well, whatever I said at the time, I don't remember. But 6 months later, I guess we were engaged, and a year later, we got married. And we had the wedding at the Barclay and hotel, which in those days was a very nice hotel, and in the ballroom there. I remember Anne was always into these things, and I remember going down and helping select the menu, and I remember meeting with the guy, and he said, we have this plate, and we have the chicken, and we have some green beans here, and we need something red. We'll have a tomato." And I said, "I don't like tomatoes." He said, "What does that have to do with it?" "We need something red on the plate." And he said, I said, "Well, I'd like some lizard or that and the other thing." "All right." He said, "We'll have the tomatoes stuffed with what you wanted." And that was a big compromise. And so, and we stayed there overnight at the Warwick, and actually went up to a party Anne's mother and father were having after the wedding at her house, and we rented an apartment in Linwood Garden, which was just off Cheltenham Avenue, not far from where she would live, and I commuted to my job down at the refinery, which was interesting. We had one car between the two of us. And so to go to the refinery, I had to take the C bus to the subway to the end of the line, and the 37 bus out to 27th and Passyama, which you did, because in those days, 1959, having more than one car was just, that's something that happened. So, I remember telling her when we were dating that I forget how much I was making at the time, but I was impressed with it because I told her how much I was making. It was like maybe $7,000 or something. And I said to her, you know, I said, I got a good shot at becoming management at this company. I said, and you know, you make $9,600 when you're a manager. Just think about that, $9,600. And she was dutifully impressed with that. So I did become a manager, and I did get my salary up to $9,600. We had, so we lived in the apartment, then we bought a row house right around the corner from my mother and father. It was 7515 North 21st Street. A lovely house. As a matter of fact, we kept some of the furniture we had in that house for more than 20 years. And that's one thing about row house is you have tremendous wall space. So it's excellent for paintings and for positioning furniture, but you don't have any windows on sides, just front and back. And so we lived there for a number of years. Anne became pregnant, and we lost our first child. And I always remember that the doctor, who was the man who had delivered six children for her sister, came out of the delivery room. In those days, the husbands didn't go in, you waited outside, and told me that my wife had a baby girl, and it would be a tax deduction. The baby had lived long enough to be a tax deduction. And I said, Doctor, that's hardly my concern. And she had a very difficult pregnancy and had almost died herself because he gave her some Demerol that she was allergic to and whatnot. But she continued to go to him, and she became pregnant again. And we had Beth, who's our oldest daughter. And I remember when she was going into the delivery room, I said to the doctor, now, Doctor, you do remember that Anne is allergic to Demerol. He said, well, how would you expect me to remember that? I had hundreds and hundreds of patients. I said, I would have thought you had at least checked her record. You almost killed her the last time she was here. And I'll remember that. I remember, too, having to bury that first child and standing, something I'll never forget, standing with a coffin, little coffin in my hands at the cemetery in Yaden. And the wind was blowing across that cemetery when the priest was saying the prayers. I remember it was so, so cold, and I didn't have gloves or anything. So that's something I've never went down in my mind. She was still in the hospital. I was there by myself. Terrible thing and whatnot. But that was probably, let's see, Beth was born in 62. We married in 60, so that was probably 1961.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you tell me a little about Anne's family and her background?
Yep.
When was she born?
Anne was born in 1937. She is 65 this year. Joined the Medicare crowd and Social Security crowd, and together I think we're drawing $27,000 in Social Security. It's really something. Anne was brought up in Philadelphia. She went, her father was a policeman. Her mother was a housewife, but originally had run a hair salon. They were from a section of Philadelphia called Brewery Town, which is down around Columbia Avenue on the 20s. 20-something street. Her mother was Irish, English. Her grandfather was an insurance salesman, and his name was Baker. And Anne's father was Hungarian. And he was, as I say, a policeman, but he was also a carpenter and craftsman. but had gone in a depression into the police force and so forth, and was a sergeant in the police force. The Bakers, it turns out, are an old English family that can trace their lineage back to the Mayflower and whatnot. And they have all of those papers that do that. And a lot of the relatives are in Lewis, Delaware, and other things like that. Anne's never been very much interested in that area, but her aunts were daughters of the American Revolution and all that. She used to always say, yes, that, and 25 cents, get you a cup of coffee. They were an interesting family, because the Bakers, both our grandmother and grandfather were dead when I met them, but the Bakers were very education-oriented. For instance, they had a son who graduated as a doctor from Jefferson in the early 1900s, of 1903 and 1905. And that tradition has continued, because I don't know how many Jefferson doctors we've had, but we had a lot, and right now have four or five in the family. They had another uncle who graduated from Jefferson, became a very noted ear, nose, and throat specialist, and whatnot. So you know, there's a long history there, they lived at 20th and Cheltenham Avenue in a row house, Anne went to private school, St. Women's Academy, which we were talking the other day, which she took, you know, a couple of buses to get there from her house, whatnot. And he didn't have any reservations about doing that because it was safe to do in those days. A kid could travel around and whatnot. And then she went to Girls High School, which was a scholarship high school, so she's a Girls High graduate. And from Girls High, she went on scholarship at Chestnut Hill College. And her sister had also gone to Chestnut Hill College. She had one older sister. And her sister passed away right after we had our second child. And we were living on 21st Street at that point. And her sister passed away, leaving six children, all of whom we have been very close to us, as a matter of fact, for Christmas, and made each child a picture album, going back and picking up all the family pictures and whatnot, you know, so that they would have it, kind of have a record of the family. Our sister died of cancer, breast cancer, and while that was going on, the neighborhood was changing, and we were being run out of our neighborhood by unscrupulous realtors. I don't know if I talked about this. And I had an early lesson in civic affairs. We were living in this lovely home on 21st Street, and black people started to move into the neighborhood who were well-educated and trying to find a better place to live, where there weren't bars and other things. And so we decided, we were young, and we had bought this house, so, you know, we didn't have any money, $300 down. And we decided that we were trying to stabilize this neighborhood. And we formed something called the Erlen Neighbors Association. The Erlen was Erlen section of West Oak Lane, and which was founded by Broad Street and by Ogden's Avenue. Make a long story short, we would have town meetings, and hundreds of people would attend. It was an interracial group of the officers. Two were white, one was black. And a fellow by the name of Tom O'Rourke, who just died, and I went to his funeral, or his wake, and met his mother, who was in his 90s, and she said, oh, I remember you. you worked with Tom and your own neighbors association. And but to make a long story short, we had a newspaper and whatnot, and we organized the neighborhood. So on every block, we had a block captain, and when the realtors solicited the neighborhood and tried to create panic and have them sell, we knew it immediately. And as a result of that, we could send them a cease and desist letter. So we were involved in that, and make a long story short, we caught a realtor. His name was John J. McElhinney. He was the biggest realtor in the area, violating the cease and desist law, orders that we had gotten. And the Human Relations Commission told us to bring a case against him to revoke his license. And so we show up for the hearings, and the city was going to represent us and so forth. And they told us when we got to the courtroom that they couldn't do that. So we had no attorney. And that nothing had happened. Somebody had broken into their offices, and the file drawer that had all of our evidence in it had disappeared. So this thing opens, and this fancy Delancey Street lawyer, some Irishman, gets up there and says that his client has been damaged by these false accusations, etc., and that these people have no proof, and this and that and the other thing, and he's going to seek retribution and is filing a lawsuit against the individuals of the association for $1 million. So we don't have any lawyer, we don't have anything, we're 28 years old, and don't have any money. And to make a long story short, we went around and tried to get somebody who would represent us. So we went to the American Civil Liberties Union. They recommended a lawyer. His name was Greenberger, Greenbaum on Delancey Street. Then going down to his office, he had steel beams in the wall with shelves that supported his books. His first floor of his house was his office. And he agreed to help us. And every night we get down there, and we couldn't afford transcripts, and he bought the transcripts, and we get down and he'd read the transcript and say, you fellas, I mean, this is just the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I mean, you've got this unincorporated association, you're personally liable, and you know, this is terrible, and so on and so forth. I'll see if I get this settled. And so he calls me up one day, and I'm at work at 27th and Passyunk, and he says, he's got it settled. And he said, I was out drinking a martini and pruning my roses last night, and I said to McElhinney's attorney, who lived next door, why don't I get this settled? So he said, we're good to settle, I got a statement for you to sign. So he read me the statement, and I said, I'm signing. He says he's a good guy, and says that we were wrong, and that's not true. He's a thief, and a hate monger, and I'm not signing. You'll sign it. I said, no, I'm not signing it. I said, I'll write you a statement, and you give it to him. And so I did. And we compromised, and finally did get a statement that we signed. Make a long story short, he then sends us a bill. We thought he was contributing his time, and it was a huge bill. I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars. Which he claimed, when questioned, was 10% of what he saved us had to go into trial. And make a long story short, I found out that I had gone down the newspaper reports on the testimony at the trial, Neighbors Association, falsifies documents implicating a realtor, and so forth. You know, they brought in handwriting experts. This was all written up in the Philadelphia magazine. They brought in handwriting experts and all of that. And so there I was, 28 years old. A lawsuit been served for $1 million and whatnot. And now I have this big legal bill. And I got a phone call from a man. His name was Bob Gerhardt. And I may have talked about this before. But Gerhardt said, I understand you got a bill from the fancy Delancey Street lawyer. how much is it? I told him, I don't remember. I don't remember now. And he said, well, why not the three of you? There were three officers that have Tom O'Rourke, Sidney Sykes, and myself. Why don't you send me what you can spare? And there's no reason why you should have to spend and save for the rest of your life when you try to do something like it. I'll pay a bill. And he did. And so that was my first taste of being active in civic awareness. I'm going to take another quick break if I can. So, but, you know, I think the fact is that Ann and I just celebrated our 40th anniversary. And the kids threw a great party for us at the beach in New Jersey, and it was a complete surprise, which is wonderful. All the family was there, including one of her sister's children flew up from Texas and so forth. So it was a great party, but over that 40 years, Ann has been an integral part of everything I've done. Not only was she a great mother and homemaker and involved with our children and whatnot, but she was actively involved with me in the business. We entertained, we traveled the world together. We built a team at ARCO, and we included the wives and families of the people who worked at ARCO as part of that. Wherever we went in the world, Ann would be with me and would always meet with the wives of the expatriates and the local nationals that were there, and to provide a sense of family, a sense of company, and whatnot. So together, over the time I was at ARCO, certainly, we were a team. And we entertained frequently people in our home, customers, company people, and so very actively involved, and very, very knew and understood what we were about, what we were trying to accomplish, and obviously couldn't have accomplished anywhere near what I did without her. She's a very perceptive person, of course very intelligent, and has a life of her own, really, of things that she's involved in. And she loves to read, and she reads several papers a day, as well as a lot of books and historical stuff, and just a person of great talent in her own right. I'm very proud of her, and you know, if she has a flaw, it's that she minimizes how accomplished a person she really is. She's a very good listener, and so she has very deep relationships with people, which are always helpful and beneficial. For instance, as I said to you before, I read the dinner with Coben because her perceptions of him were important. Most people said you couldn't trust Marshall Coben. And my feeling was that, in the experience I had with him, that you could, and that he was a man of his word, and he would live by his word, and so forth. I was interested in seeing what Ann thought. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. We've been all over the world. We've met with people in Taiwan, and met with the chairman Wong and his wife, and Ann and I, and those relationships are very important in business. And we were at the CMA. I was chairman of the Chemical Manufacturers Association, and twice a year, WISE were included in those meetings. And you develop relationships with people that are more than just a business relationship. And those relationships are extremely helpful to business, and especially when times are difficult. They really mean a lot I was never a gobbler, and so the relationships I developed were relationships more than involved husbands and wives, and she worked very hard at that, and so you know, a very little part of my career and whatever success I've had, she's played a significant role. As I say, hit the 40 mark, hopefully we'll go beyond 50 and more, and you know, it's been a wonderful life, and we're working this night.
Now, say some words about your daughters and what they've wanted to do.
Well, my daughters are great. Beth, my oldest, got into banking, and